So we're just doing Pirkei Avos, and it's not really part of Pirkei Avos, it's the add-on. The sixth paragraph is the add-on.
You mean Mashiach?
Yeah, I guess so. Something like that. Well, we'll talk in a second. So it says it's talking about the Torah, Kuna, and Malchus, which presumably are the three crowns, which a person, the Rambam talks about, three ksarim that Klal Yisrael is given. They were looked up to, and three attributes of Klal Yisrael is Torah, Kuhuna, and Malchus. So the Mishnah says, the Braisa says, that Torah is greater than all of them, because Malchus is acquired through 30 things, that the king has 30 halachos, which he keeps, that he's not judged, and judges other people, and he doesn't all the different halachos of the king, and thereby he's looked up as a king, and the Kuhuna of 24, through 24 Manas Kuhuna, and Torah through 48. And it lists all 48 things, different character traits and stuff. Okay, many, many different character traits. Ema, Yira, Nova, whatever. All list of character traits. It says the Torah is nicknamed through them, and then it ends, the last one is Omer Dover B'Shem Omer. You say something in the name of its author. And it says, Hala Mazata, you can learn, Shekal Omer Dover B'Shem Omer, maybe Gulolam. Anyone who says something in the name of its own, of its author brings Gula to the world. So, Shenemar, the rest of the middle, Hashem Mordechai, because Esther quoted Amon, Mordechai to Ahasuerus. So the question is what? How do you learn from here the fact that it made the list that Kol Hamad Hashem Omer maybe Gulolalam? It just seems to be so far fetched. I mean, there's 47 other things on the list, and it's not saying they bring Gulolalam. So how does it follow? What's the connection between this and maybe Gulolalam? Yeah.
I think of two things to say on that. One, in the Gemara, we all know that. Very, very, there are any number of several hundred places in the Gemara which says, Omar, Rebbe, Shimon, Omar,
yes.
And you have 5, 6, 7 chain of transmissions quoting who said it, who said it.
Uh-huh.
And the second thing is, quite literally, Esther related this information to Ahasuerus, Beshem Mordechai, because if she hadn't done that, then maybe Haman's scheme might succeeded.
Yeah, correct, that's the pshat.
So, quite literally.
Yes, that's what I mean. Maybe Gulolom, the redemption of the Jews, came about through this through these events. But it's a little bit far-fetched, and that's what's going to happen in general. Now, if I say something, Shem Omra, I'm going to leave maybe Gulolom. I mean, there's it seems to be.
We don't know what a Jew does today can have consequences or results.
That's true.
2, 3 generations later.
That's true, but you can say that about anything. You can say a Jew wears scissors today and is maybe Gulolam, because we don't know. But presumably, there should be some connection.
Himself, between himself and Hashem. But saying something, B'Shem Omro, this involves obviously at least 2 people, 3 people.
It's true. It's
the
true.
One who originally said it.
But so does
I who repeating it, and you who are hearing it.
It's true. But the benching of the Zimun, benching of the Mizumin involves 3 people. But you don't say that. So maybe you go on. Because maybe someday, I mean, presumably the connection should be a little tighter, and just because it's a good thing, and you don't know what, And it's true, in this story it worked out that way. But this is like a very, unique story. How in general does Rabbi Yehuda quoting something in the name of Rav lead to maybe Gulolam or anyone, Gemara's in general, saying something in the name of so-and-so rabbi? How is that maybe Gulolam?
Sometimes repeating something that someone said, quoting the one who originally said it, could be an act of warning someone of danger.
Really?
Well, I'm thinking in the Haftorah Machar HaKodesh, the story of Yonasan and David, where Yonasan says, look, my father said such and such, and to David, this saved David.
That's true. But that's not a characteristic of the normal thing. That's my point. There's like a lot of stories of unique things happening, but it's hard to generalize from instances which are very particular to those stories. Mm.
In a loose way, the essence stage and the build up to Mashiach and ultimate redemption, it does seem to involve some in solidarity. Or it seems that, and at the climax of those things, we're true homogeneous people. So it seems in some loose sense that the more united we are,
right.
It is certain that Mashiach is not going to come one way or one way.
Right.
Factions and whatnot, and we haven't been working together. So it seems in some way here,
we're unified.
It does partake of that, because without that, it certainly cannot happen.
Right. I hear you. So is that character? Is that tied in with the story of Mordechai and Esther, or not really?
Well, I guess we don't know who's going to be a Mordechai and an Esther, but we do know that.
Right, but my point is that the idea there isn't because of not having factions. Doesn't seem, you know. I think. Unless you could somehow, that's what I'm asking, could you fit that in your pshat into that story?
Yeah, but the whole thing was, God was kind of involved there though, so.
Right, but still, to make that as like a model, which indicates this idea, it seems to be, you know, a little funny.
So what does it mean when we cite something, something, and well, what's going on, right?
Uh-huh.
He said, like, you know, it's in the Gemara, a holy place. And,
right. Yeah, right.
I guess from a negative point of view, it's like, you know, so we're not full of ourselves.
Right.
I mean, in that sense. But it also ensures the transmission and the continuation, because when someone challenges us, we can...
say who it's from.
Yeah, and trace it back.
Right.
But you're saying in the Megillah that none of that thing
doing. Doesn't seem so, right? That's my question. That's a good question, right? Why wouldn't you? Well, what's the chiddush altogether?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you say his name? Shame on them.
Oh, I don't. She could get credit.
What?
She could get. I mean, especially in her position, she wants.
Give credit. Okay, good. So why wouldn't you? I mean, isn't it pasha? What else would she do? Take credit? Like, yeah. Is there? What's the chiddush of this?
That's what I'm saying. She should take credit. That's a normal.
Oh, she should take. Oh, ensign. You mean she should take? Normally, psychologically, a person wants to take credit.
They want it for themselves.
Nice.
Especially.
Yeah, in this case, I would for sure. I mean, she happened not to like him, but in general, somebody wants to suck up to the king. In this case, it just happens.
Don't just take credit, you mean. Don't take credit for things that aren't yours, really yours.
Right, I think that's an ad. Just like, you know, everybody wants, you know, all the money, all the other things.
Don't plagiarize.
Right, don't plagiarize, that kind of thing. Okay. Because...
well, there's a few reasons, you know. Why.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that you're ripping off from somebody, you're not giving in.
Okay, it's not right.
Credit, and also, you're not doing it. So it's bad for you, and you think you're doing something when you're not.
Right. You mean,
I don't know why it deserves to be, you know, that you redeem
maybe go a little on that. That sounds like a little bit of a stretch, though.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Also, from the recipient point of view, the person who's hearing the audience, the person who's hearing the person speaking, thinks of this person, you know, sharing an idea that they, you know, attributing to somebody that they came up with.
Right.
So, you know, it puts that first, it puts the person who's speaking into, you know, puts them in a certain realm. It's like, oh, you know, this is what you thought of. And, you know, sort of like a false, creates a false impression.
I don't see what you're saying.
Because if I say something and I'm quoting somebody, or, you know, you mention somebody's idea and I don't give them credit, then, you know, you hearing what I'm saying, you might think that, like, oh, you know, I really came up with a great idea.
Okay.
But really, it's not true. I'm just passing along.
You shouldn't take credit. If you just say it anonymously, people will think it's from you. Right? They'll think that it's your idea, and then you'll end up giving you credit, but you don't really deserve the credit because it's not really your thing.
Well, you are stealing, I mean. It's not money, but it's in halacha and in American law. I mean, that's a...
It's a type of stealing. That's what Moshe's saying, really.
Right. You're stealing.
You're stealing the credit.
Well, there's no loss on
that person's...
Well, sort of is, because he's not going to get the credit. Someone gets credit for the thing. It's a good idea, so someone's going to take credit. Now you're going to take the credit, he's not going to get the credit. If you quoted him, he'd get the credit for what he deserves, right? Because it's his thing.
Well, often stealing involves a loss on night.
No, but even if you can take a...
Well, it sort of is a loss, because you would have gotten... You're the one who originated this idea, and now you should deserve the credit, and you should get the credit. And you will get the credit.
There's no deficit. If somebody stole my money, then I'm not only... I'm less than whole.
Right.
Here it's like, okay, well, I...
Oh, okay. Well, sort of. I mean, you could say, well, I have a good idea, so then I have a credit to my name of getting the recognition for that idea. Now I'm less in whole because you've basically taken it away from me. It's not exactly
not,
the
I'm
same.
Not, I'm not any less. Okay, so I have a great idea. I tell somebody. And that person goes and tells somebody else. I'm not, you know, any less of a... You know, like, I don't...
Right.
I'm not any less because... And
you
get credit from that.
Well, sort of. You could think of it as like a zechus. Like when you have a zechus to do something, so you're basically taking away a zechus. Like I have a zechus to get credit for my ideas.
I think there's a difference between something that's only a positive.
Right.
And something else has negative.
So it's easy to say that it's a good thing. We just can't say how it's
good. Brings Gula to the world. Yeah, right. Why it's so significant and why it brings Gula to the world and that whole thing, right?
There's no commentary in that, or you don't want to read it yet?
No, you know, unfortunately...
Six pairs, nothing on it?
There's very little. There's Rashi. But if you've done... Let me just see if there is, actually. It's a Gemara also, but... I don't think the Gemara had anything on it either. I'm not sure I remember. But, unfortunately, my experience... And knowing Perei Avos, which is not very vast, but I've been there for a little bit now, is that the one commentary, Rashi, it's not clear. Apparently it's not clear in the Masora whether Rashi is really Rashi or not. Or some other commentary that's just a fake Rashi.
And some other what?
Whether it's not really Rashi, or it's really Rashi, or it's some other commentator that's...
Certain of the Masechta.
In Avos.
Oh, in Avos, huh?
Specifically. And it's a debate. I mean, they say the Rebbe said it really is Rashi, but I don't know. From my doing it, it doesn't seem like there seem to be indications that it's not really Rashi. But it's hard. I'm no maven, but certainly it's not. It's character, you know. Seems to me not in line with his normal style. As normal.
Is it the normal style?
It's hard to tell.
Writing.
It's hard to tell. It's hard for me to tell. You can feel need to look at it. It's hard, you know. I haven't studied Rashi's style, but. It seems to me a little bit out, you know, but I don't know. But my point is on this one, it's even more questionable whether it's on the six parak, because the six parak itself isn't clear when exactly it emerged as being part of Perei Avos. Brisos, the statements go way back, but it's not clear when they're, you know. So I don't know, it seems like the Rashis are even more sketchy on this parak, even more than the rest of them. Sadly. So that's all we got on the six parak. And the Rashi is, you know, so they're sparse. Although they're sparse, they're not. The girsas are a little bit funny. They're, you know, so I don't know. There's nothing, you know, on this that I know of.
The Bar Tenura is commenting on the entire Mishnah.
Mm-hmm.
Does he also comment on Avos?
Yes, but not on. I don't think on this parak.
Not on this particular.
On six parak. Not on the six parak. Because again, it's not really part of Avos. It was added on, I think. think when they started reading Prakhan and Sphere and they needed a sixth paragraph, I think they added out something like that. Yeah.
The case of Mordechai sounds like it's the feature of the bringing the Gula is completely accidental. It's accidental as a story. It seems like the Mishnah is making it the opposite.
Right.
It's making it the main, but really, it'd be like saying like this: oh, well, since Esther quoted Mordechai, that brought the Gula. Nothing to do with the fact that, you know, like,
And it's hard to be moved. I should be causing Mishem Omro because of that. Well, maybe that's going to happen to me. You know? Like if I say over an idea on the name of whatever, my Chavrusa, then that's going to bring me the whole Gula like that.
No,
it just seems like far-fetched, you know?
No, that was an extreme case.
Yeah, okay, but what's the general rule if that's an extreme case? Oh, it doesn't seem to be relevant at all. You know, I don't mind that the quantities are a little bit extreme, but I don't see what the general principle is altogether.
And this is a method of acquiring Torah?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not clear, but yeah, it's... seems that the Torah is nicknames through these things,
I thought you said like the list of things, like 40 things written about it.
40 things, which is nicknames. The Torah is acquired through these 48 things.
Acquired.
Keser of Torah.
That's funny, right? It's certainly not the content of the Torah. It's not the Torah itself. It's a citation.
Right.
Almost.
Citation, right.
Yeah, but if you have an ego, you have a part of Torah. So this negates that.
But we've already, the Mishnah itself already addresses that, right?
Gaiva.
What?
Yeah, Anava. Anava is one of the middos already.
It seems like
that. But it doesn't, Anava could be more of a...
general?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Like the college professor and his ego in that area, but it's a different ego in another area.
Right. Yes. That's so.
I'm just, as you just said, I don't think they are. It's the same thing as.
Oh, I understand.
You could dichotomize this and, you know, you could address that to some extent. Somebody could say, you know, in the introduction that they don't know who said this, but they're not saying it of their own.
Right. That I know. It's true.
So is that...
does that work?
Is that right? Is that maybe Gula?
Sure. Does it mean, that's a good question, is it just the idea that you don't take credit for something which isn't yours, or is it specifically that you say it in the Shem Omro? Right? Are you just saying this if you just say it's not my idea, but it's someone's?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, in fact, it's you're affecting the same results by saying, I didn't say it.
You're right. Why not just always do that? In fact, why not just always do that?
In fact, sometimes I do try to do that rather than that. Because then if I say Rabbi Chait said it, then it's...
I know, the Rambam does that.
It's another negative effect.
I know, the Rambam says that, I think, in the intro to Chelek or somewhere. He says, there's certain ideas which are not my own. I'm quoting from other people, but I'm not going to say who I'm quoting, because when I say their names, everyone's going to just reject it, right? So I'm just going to do it, you know? So that's the case. But the question is that's true, that you got to have damage control, you got to realize it's not going to help. What's the point of quoting Moshe Momro if they're just going to reject it? That's not really... but at the same time, is that a key of this halacha? You know, like, is the essence here just that you're not taking credit, or is the essence that you're quoting the Moshe Momro? You could say, listen, that you're not doing Moshe Momro when you do that. Like, look, maybe it's a smart thing to do. In this case, it's an exception of not to do it, but at the same time, is that... if the essence of Tehillah Moshe Momro is not to take credit, then it would seem to just do that all the time. What do you have to say, Moshe Momro?
And also, I mean, you can also be even more. I mean, so is it like, you know, can you do it in a generic, like?
Right.
Or is, okay, I heard from.
Or am I?
Or like, you know the direction. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I heard from.
Briskatora. A brisker.
I heard it from one of my rebbeim in
Yeshiva. Oh right.
I heard like, is there something to like? You know, this is it.
How particular?
Giving that, and it was, I think you said at one point that, well, you know, maybe it's that you need to give credit to that specific person because, you know, they there's this chus out there. So you know what? If you don't really channel it to that person, then they're not getting it.
Right. I hear that.
It's almost like they are.
Right.
They're entitled to it.
Right. They're entitled to that.
Is it talking about anyone there, or is it talking about blood and sore?
It's, I don't know. It seems to be being applied by sort of, but presumably it's a general idea.
But general idea, but here it is.
Seems to be it's being used like Mordechai, and like when you say Torah, over Torah, it seems the context is about Torah.
Sorry, so.
Teaching, telling over Torah.
What's that?
Telling over Torah.
Volume of Sora is and what happens after Google? What is Google?
I don't know, you tell me.
I get not into that.
What?
I don't know that.
Oh, so what is Google? I don't want to ask either.
I asked the what question.
I don't know, it's a good question. That's part of the question we ask, right?
What everybody gets along is
over. Perhaps. Yeah. So.
I was thinking like this.
So this idea, I learned this with Chavrus Aaron Zimmer, Rabbi Zimmer, and. Also, I wanted to tell a story. Once upon a time, I was at a dinner, and Rabbi Chait was speaking, and I think he was introducing the speaker, the honored guest, and he said the following. He said that the whole idea, the institution of honoring people at dinners, is somewhat paradoxical. I may be paraphrasing a bit, okay? But it's somewhat paradoxical. Why? He says, because Mimanafshach. If the person who you're honoring was doing all the things that he did in order to receive the honor, right? Then he doesn't deserve the honor. Because, you know, right? That's just as a guy who's looking out for himself.
You don't chase honor.
Right. And if he didn't do it for the honor, he just did it because he wants to do these things, so then he doesn't need the honor. What's the point? He's not doing it for that, he's not interested. Now you're just distracting him by giving him this honor. Right? But in fact, it makes him uncomfortable. So he says, so what's the whole point of having a dinner?
I agree with him.
Besides for raising money.
You can send a check.
Okay, now there is a practicality that you'll get more money by doing dinners.
Right.
But it's still, there's like, there's something these are pointing out, there's something a little bit ridiculous about the institution of honor. But
in terms of this, in the Torah framework, but not in a regular life.
Yeah, I understand, fine.
Like
he says, no, but he thinks the answer is that you honor the person for other people.
They'll be inspired.
Yes, because you're saying he is a person who deserves the honor. And other people want honor, and they're motivated to say, oh, that's how we'll get the honor.
That's funny.
Now, she says once they start doing it, then it doesn't work. But the point is that you set up a role model, or a model, as this is the value. He's a Baal Big Baal Chesed. Ah, Chesed is a value. This is what society values. Torah, learning, that's a value. So you declare to people the values, and it inspires and motivates and moves other people towards the values which the honoree stands for. Okay? Sure, I don't remember the rest of Rohit's speech, because it was about that honoree, so I don't remember who it was or anything, but you know, you could fill in the blanks. But the point is like this, is that Baal Masora, the person who really wears the crown of Torah, has many, many big, good character traits. Amongst them being Anava, and being, he runs away from Kavod. He's not interested in Kavod. He does his own thing. He's not looking for to be in the limelight. Like a politician or something, or a Hollywood star or something, is everyone knows about their greatness. But in a certain sense, the Gavra of Torah is not open. His midos, all his different character traits which it lists, are in a certain sense private midos. They're midos with which he's Kona Torah himself. Now, the crown of Torah is meant to be a crown, and a crown has a grandeur to it. People look at the crown and they say, wow, that's something, that's awesome, that's something that I want to be like. The problem is in a certain sense, the crown of Torah is, in theory, will never be realized, because the person who truly wears the crown of Torah doesn't wear it, but he keeps it in his closet and he doesn't let anybody see it. So he's an anav, and he's not going out and broadcasting his greatness and all his character traits and all his chachma and all his Torah and all his, right? So it's like, how exactly is the crown, it's like, how is this crown supposed to function? The king is a king, and he goes around in his throne, and everyone sees him, you know? The Kohen, as everyone's giving him gifts. But how exactly is the Torah, the crown of Torah, accomplished? So it could be that the solution is through Omer Dava B'Shem Omro, which is that, see, if the person himself, there is a value for the person, the Talmid Chacham, to be respected. That's important for society, to respect Talmid Chacham, to look up to him, to see him as a person, to be emulated, and to learn from his ways. But he can't go around tooting his own horn and saying, hey, emulate me, I'm the guy, right? Even though maybe it would make sense, because it's true. But he can't do that. It doesn't run that. It doesn't work that way. Says it runs after Kavod, it runs away from him. People project onto him his own egocentricism, and they're never going to believe it. And then he's not going to get any Kavod. So he can't even self-promote, because it undermines his fact. So what then is the solution? How is it he going to get the Kavod? So through Omer Dava B'Shem Omro, through other people quoting him. If people quote, give credit where credit is due. People don't just quote things anonymously, but when so-and-so person says something good, say that it's in his name. And maybe like with the Rabbi Shade thing, like for instance, I mean, none of these things are delicate, but like maybe to say something in his, if you say enough smart things in his name, then maybe you realize, wow, he has great ideas. You know, you have to be the person in this situation. But the idea is like by people quoting other people and the people who deserve kavod, people say, "Wow, this person really is deserving of kavod," and thereby you could set up a society where the talmid chachamim and the leaders or the true leaders are the ones who are going to be respected. And I think what's saying is geula takes place when you need to have like a leadership. You need to have a society which is centered around strong great leaders. And the strong great leaders have to be established as strong great leaders. And the way that happens is through people talking about the other people. And you have to have a society. Gula comes out through a society which could organize around greatness, around good character traits, and around good mythos. And that could happen when people are aware and exposed to the greatness of great people. And that happens through saying things in the Shem Omro, through people knowing about the character traits. But they can't do it on their own. They have to do it through other people, because on your own it doesn't work. So, it could be, as I was saying, is that that's the culmination. You see, it's not just the last of the 48. It's like the 47 are character traits that he has. But the last but not least, finally, Shem Omro, is all these character traits in a certain sense go towards the privatization of the Talmud Chacham. But Omer Dava B'Shem Omro, as I say, is the final cap, which is that which allows the characteristic traits of the Chacham to become known and to function properly, and thereby to set up a society centered around the Chachamim. And that's maybe Gulal. And that's it could be what happened by Mordechai and Esther. Because see, by Mordechai and Esther, so Mordechai, in theory, what does he need the greatness for? What do you think he wants to be the famous guy who saves Amshu? What does he need it for? He wanted to just sit and learn. He didn't need to be the ruler of the second in command of the kingdom, you know. But it's important for Klal Yisrael to have a person like Mordechai. He's a role model for the people. People can look up to him, and he's in a position of power. He can make impact. He can impact the outcome of the future. So it is important for him. But how is he going to do it? He's not going to go around tooting his own horn. And in theory, Esther could have said, nah, he doesn't need the stuff. What do I need to give him this gedula? Let him stay home in his private sphere and whatever. But she said, no. Is that if he's did a great thing, he saved the king's life, and he put himself out for that, so that should be known. And people should know Mordechai is the person who does this. And in fact, that's why the Jews ended up being saved. Because her argument was is that the Jews don't want to harm the kingdom. The Jews, if anything, that you want to sell us as servants, that would be great. We don't want to harm the kingdom. We don't want that. Haman, he wants that. Jews, no, we don't want that. And that's exactly what Mordechai did and was known as because of the fact that she was told that to Ahasuerus. So it's an instance of the fact that it's important when a tzaddik or when someone does something good to give him credit so that people will know where credit is due. And people will be able to learn from the certain great people. And if you keep everything secret and you don't tell anybody where a few other people's great statements or great, you know, great mitos, then they're never going to be able to be set up as role models, then you're not going to have a gula. Gula demands like a strong, a good leadership around the great people.
Didn't bring redemption, just happened to happen because that was the plan.
Yes, but the point is the plan was not to keep Mordechai in private isolation and for nobody to know about him. But it was the plan is that insofar as he's great, you give him his greatness and you give him his due. There's two ways to react to this situation. She could have said, let Mordechai stay at home. Don't tell anybody it was him. Save the king. No tell him it was him. He'll be an anav. He doesn't need the grand door. He doesn't need to be in the Sefer Zechronos. What does he need that for? Let him learn Torah. That is an approach. He says, look, I'm just going to put my head in the Gemara and stay, forget it. But she says, no. Is that he really did something for the kingdom, and that's something to be looked up to, and it's important that a king, that a Mordechai should be respected for that. Why exactly? Obviously, she didn't know exactly how it was going to pan out. But just in general, it's important. It's good for people to respect people who truly deserve respect. That's important. And that happens through actually giving credit where credit is due, through saying it b'shem amro, particularly.
So how does that work with us?
We should say things b'shem amro.
But it doesn't ring over.
Well, it does insofar. I mean, look, it doesn't mean it does it like a drop of a hat, but it means it's towards Gula, which is the force towards Gula is that it enables us to set up. To the degree that we do it, it sets up the great people as being great people. People know about the great memories and the great traits of great people. You know, we're talking about them. People know the Rav was the Chacham, was a great Lamda, because everyone says over his Torah, and they show he's clearly someone to look up to. And that's how, so now you can set up a society around Tamidei Chachamim once people respect Tamidei Chachamim. The way they get their respect is by people quoting their words and saying, this is his name, this is his name, this is his name.
Why is that so much more powerful than some of the other 47 qualities?
I'm saying it's not that it's more powerful, it's like the icing. This was Zimmer's point. It's like, it's more showing is like the other 47 are like the personal traits of the Tamidei Chachamim himself. Mm-hmm. This thing is more what allows those 47 to function properly. It's like the fact that the 47 on their own would remain private and wouldn't really be able to function to give him his kesser. So it's like it's like 47 plus one. And that plus one is like what realizes the first 47, you know?
What do you mean private?
Because it's like he's an anav and people don't necessarily know about his greatness and don't know about his chachma in theory. If not for the fact that people quote him, people talk about him, people, you know, that's how he becomes known, through people saying things to Shem Amram, you know. Otherwise, he would be a private chal tzaddik. No one know about him. No one knows words. No one knows chachma. No one knows midos. A small, you know, wouldn't get out. But Hashem Omro allows, you know, gives credit where credit is due. So someone deserves credit, and he has great chidushim or great ideas or great whatever. Let people know that he has them. Why should it be a secret? Should he deserves respect? Yeah. I don't know. I don't think there's such a thing as that. I mean, the more respect the person gains, the more chachma, the more people are moved. Respect is also a subtle thing. Person, the more you hear a good idea from somebody, it could be you have a different feeling towards them. I mean, I don't know if they say it's not so that it's an exact quantity.
Yeah, it's another area of chachma that you're hearing in that person's name, right. And it's like, oh. I mean, doesn't that build a person up?
Yeah, but after such a point, I mean, if someone sat in Rebbe's shiur for year after year after year after year after year, 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 and he's seen it all, thing, you know, like.
But he's going to be telling other people, Rebbe told me this or something like that, and people are going to hear. So it's in general, it's to get the word out in the world. So when you say over ideas, you should say it, B'Shem Omra. So you may know that Rebbe's great, but not everyone else in the world knows. So when you're saying it over, B'Shem Omra, thereby you make that public. You give him the, you know, then maybe people will pass that down to the next.
But doesn't each thing also, like, I don't know, every time you hear an idea, it's like, oh.
Right, it moves you. I mean, even you on a personal level, it moves you towards it.
So even though, you know.
Right. Right, both. They're both true.
No, I mean, you know, even if you've heard somebody for 5 years, 10 years, 1 year, you're like one insight, you know, another thing.
Right.
Yeah, particularly if you're moving around.
Yes, I agree with that. Okay, any question? Okay.